The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to see if there's any sunscreen available for a team that just can't take the heat. As trade winds blow across the NBA, there's one particular team that you probably don't want to buck this weekend. And as Musical Chairs plays along in the NCAA Big Dance, we're going to tell you which teams won't have a seat available come the round of the Sweet 16.
So, Dave, tons of tournament action yesterday. Obviously, one of the most exciting days of the year for any sports bettor. What's your first take? What'd you see that you want to share with our audience today?
Something not on the court, but something on our own show that we kind of screwed up this week doing our tournament previews. One last little element that we should have weaved in, and it mattered both the minor tournaments Tuesday and Wednesday and in the Big Dance yesterday, and it's the fact that you extend your range up a little bit of those underdogs who will foul in the end game. Regular season, a lot of times, we're comfortable with that 7 and 8 point dog because you're not fouling if you're down at the spread in the final minute. Usually if you're down by more than 6, you don't foul, you'll play a game out. Here's the problem come tournament time. You're down 8, you're down 9. This is your last chance. And also for a lot of these underdogs, it's a rare chance to be in the limelight as well. So you play the games out just a little bit more. One of the things we should have told you, that 7, 8, 9 point underdog, not only be aware that they're much more likely to foul late in the game than they were in the regular season, but also look at the free throw shooting of the favorites in those more than you would. Several games came down to that yesterday. Several more are liable to over the weekend. You watched basketball all day, didn't you, yesterday?
Yes, I did.
All day long. You got a smile on your face.
I did.
Better than coming in here, wasn't it?
You know, yesterday was, this is what I wanted my first take, fun! You know, I mean, we talk here on the show, we spend all this time, we're bitching and moaning about bad beats and analyzing games and all of that. The first day of March Madness, really the whole opening weekend of March Madness, there is no better time to be a sports bettor. Even if you lost yesterday, I bet you had fun watching the games. I bet you had fun betting all day and night. And if you're here in Vegas, I mean, I saw it on Wednesday night at the Trop. Where there was an enormous buzz in a sports book that is not always the busiest. It was packed on Wednesday, packed yesterday, every sports book in town, and just guys just like us, you know, having a good time, betting on games, having a couple of beers, and hopefully winning some money. But I'll tell you what, the opening weekend of March Madness, it should be a holiday. No one should have to work. So, Dave, we're going to have to bust through this show because it's time to go home and watch some games again today. Because, you know, you have to pace yourself. A long weekend. So there's so much to catch up on. We have a pile of great emails that we haven't been able to get to this week. We have all the NBA trades, and there was a ton yesterday at the trading deadline. Trades are going to impact at least 8 or 10 teams throughout the course of the remainder of the season. We have coaches being fired. Well, guess what? All that stuff, we'll worry about that on Monday. For today's show, we're going to concentrate on the games in the NBA for tonight. And, of course, the games in college basketball for tomorrow. But, Dave, before we even get started on that, there are two games going today, which we did not have a chance to preview on our preview edition show on Wednesday, that huge double edition Vegas Sports Day. We have to talk about Vermont, North Carolina. We have to talk about South Florida Temple, two matchups that were not set when we went off air 48 hours ago.
One bit of information we still don't have a clarification on yet, will John Henson play for North Carolina? Still a good chance that he might sit out one more time to be rested for more important games ahead. Reason why we wanted to focus in on that, not so much just the size advantage that they would have over Vermont if you have Zeller and Henson both. The fact that those two guys run the court as well as any big men of their size on the same team we've seen in many years. Here's why that matters so much. Against a team like Vermont, you only need to really keep one on the boards. The other guy's able to leak out. Teams like Vermont, so unaccustomed to having the big men for other teams run the floor the way those guys do for Carolina, can't do anything with the game, though. Until we know about Henson, that won't be decided until a little bit later.
Yeah, and when we talk about both these games, we've seen significant line moves in each of them. North Carolina opened in the range of 16.5. That's down to 15 in most locations right now. Haven't seen much movement on the total, still in that 144, 144.5 range. But we have seen the early money coming on Vermont. And the other game, the Temple, South Florida, it's been nothing but a torrent of money coming on Temple, where that line opened pick 'em. And now you're looking at Temple -3 in many locations. I don't disagree with that move, but South Florida, their tenacious level of defense in the win over Cal, it blew me away what the Bulls were able to do in that ballgame. And all of a sudden you take a look at a team that's not very sexy, and now, you know, they have a tournament win already. I wouldn't be shocked at all to see the Bulls hang tough with Temple tonight and maybe even have a chance to knock out your 100-1 shot, Dave.
Not sure we expect to see that happen. One of the reasons why we like Temple so much, difficult team to prepare for. A lot of complex X's and O's schemes. That becomes a South Florida problem. Not much downtime at all to be able to go up against this opponent. I think what we saw a lot, too, in the South Florida game Wednesday, a game that we were dead wrong on in our projection, a soft team from the Pac-12 didn't step up to the physical tenacity of a team from the Big East. That was apparent very, very early. Temple, a bunch of East Coast kids, play a tougher brand of basketball. They won't back down or be intimidated by some of the things South Florida was able to do on Wednesday. Key tonight is, can South Florida find a way to score? Didn't have to worry about that Wednesday because they had the big lead early, but if you notice, as the game went on, their offense completely bogged down.
Sure, made a big difference if you had Cal minus the points in the second half watching the last 10 minutes of that ball game. But of course, when you get off to an 8-0, 15-3, and then 33-13 lead before that three-pointer right before halftime, it takes some of the sweat out of the last few minutes of that ball game. All right, I talked a little bit earlier in the show about those emails, and again, we're going to clean up the email box next week. Please, you got questions? You got suggestions? You have something that you want an answer to? Dave and I will do our best to do that. Send those emails, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day, and you can get involved in the community with active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting.
Up next, of course, college basketball is not the only game in town. We're going to start Money Time with the Friday NBA board.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. We're going to start in the NBA in Philadelphia, where tonight the Miami Heat, 3.5-point road favorites against the Sixers, and it's kind of a unique situation for Miami, something we haven't seen from them since the first couple of weeks of the season. That is, they're coming in off back-to-back losses. They fell in overtime in Orlando on Thursday, then fell to the Tuesday? Yeah, it's been a long week. They lost in overtime to Orlando. I watched the game on TV. I don't remember what night it was. Then, of course, they fell at the Bulls without Derrick Rose, not Jalen Rose. I always want to say Jalen's Rose thing. Without Derrick Rose, And they were out-rebounded in those two losses, 96-70, really dominated on the glass and out-physical in the paint in both defeats. It's worth noting, you know, the tremendous duo of LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, they scored 71 points at Chicago. The rest of the team combined, 31. So, likely to see Miami with a chip on their shoulder tonight, and if they do bring that chip on their shoulder and they're trying to wipe out this losing streak, boy, there is some matchup advantage that the Philadelphia 76ers just haven't been able to solve against this particular team.
Yeah, Doug Collins has really struggled with his X's and O's in this matchup, but not just here, against most of the upper echelon teams of the NBA. Remember, we continue to run this Philadelphia close encounters chart. 76ers have dominated weak teams, have not stepped up well, but boy, of all their step-ups, this has been the worst. Two meetings so far this season. Let's take a look at just how bad it's been. On the scoreboard, about 212 to 171, a 41-point Miami advantage. They did it across the board. First note, they beat the spread by 32.5, shows that the odds makers have not been on top of the series pretty very well. 53.2% shooting for the Heat in those games, plus 30 in rebounds. That rebounding thing might be the most important tonight. As we know, Miami struggled on the boards in the last two. If you bring a chip on your shoulder, see, it's one thing to miss shots, but when the coach says, look, we got out-hustled, we got outworked on the boards these last two games, let's get our intensity back. If they bring that, that's tough for Philadelphia to have to match.
You know, one plus for the Sixers, they did get Spencer Hawes back in the lineup finally after his extended injury absence, but he may still have a long way to go to get back to 100%. Scored only 6 points, grabbed only two rebounds in Wednesday's loss in Indiana, and had five fouls in just over 19 minutes of court time. So it's not like Hawes came out and was the dominant player, or at least the solid player that he was prior to him getting hurt. We'll see if a couple of days in the system helps him here. But it's worth noting that the 76ers lost the boards 37-26 that night. So they were a minus 11 in the rebound department. And they allowed the Pacers, who've been a mediocre offensive team all year, Indiana, 36 of 59 from two-point range. On Wednesday night.
Let's head out to the Bay Area. Milwaukee right now a 2.5-point favorite over host Golden State. What are we doing with two losing teams head-to-head? Maybe the most interesting of all immediate situations that came out of what happened before the trade deadline. Monte Ellis, Yupke Udo, now in Milwaukee uniforms, and they'll be in Milwaukee uniforms tonight. Don't have to fly back to Milwaukee. Just change uniforms, play on the same court you're accustomed to playing on. Big boost for the Bucks. They've won their last four games in a row. They're now tied with the Knicks for that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, and they're talking like they want that. Even though you've got to go up against Miami or Chicago, they want to play their way in. It's a big addition for them. They did not have a scorer at the number two spot. Ellis provides that. They need a depth inside. Udo provides that. They lose nothing. Andrew Bogut wasn't going to be back again this year. They'll miss him in the future, but they lose nothing immediately. Steven Jackson, who knows if he ever would have played another game in a Milwaukee uniform. So big-time addition for Milwaukee. For Golden State, you wonder about the character a little bit. It's almost like saying this season is over. We don't think Stephen Curry's going to play tonight. A lot of issues there. But maybe the most interesting thing for Milwaukee, not worrying about Andrew Bogut in the future, because they've got another guy emerging offensively in the front court that makes it real interesting.
Yeah, they sure do. You know, here's a real rarity. How about a team having the current player of the week from each conference, both the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference player of the week, shooting up for Milwaukee tonight? I mean, obviously you might guess that Monta Ellis was the Western Conference player of the week last week off of his recent surge. But is there anyone on any team who's playing better without getting any pub whatsoever than Ersan Ilyasova? You know, not just a good week for Ilyasova. This is a guy who's been playing at an all-star level, basically, since the all-star break. Look at the numbers. You know, this is not a household name. I'll bet 9 out of 10 can't even pronounce it right. Ersan, I know it's Ilyasova, that much. But look at it, 19 points a game, 9.2 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 58.5% shooting. Yeah, those are all-star numbers. And perhaps one of the reasons why the Bucks decided to make this trade and get rid of Andrew Bogut, who's been their centerpiece center, is the level that Ilyasova's playing at, along with Drew Gooden in the low post for Milwaukee. You know, If you have a scorer like this, you can afford to think defense first at center. And again, this is a Milwaukee team. They've been playing with very good energy and focus in recent weeks. And despite the fact that they realistically don't have much of a chance against the likes of Chicago or Miami in the first round, the Bucks are playing like they want to be in the postseason. And that is most assuredly meaningful at this time of the year. Now, the Golden State attitude likely to be a little bit different without Monta Ellis. Here's a quote from Klay Thompson that says, "We can't give up easy buckets because we don't have Monta to bail us out and score 40 a game. We just have to band together. We've done a great job of that the past two games, and we have to do that on Friday night as well." Nice to say it. I'm not so sure the execution for Golden State will be at that level because, again, not only without Monta Ellis, Stephen Curry sidelined once again indefinitely. Don't know when he's going to be back in the lineup. So you have to wonder if this team feels like maybe we're playing for next year now. They've kind of packed it in, perhaps, for the 2012 campaign.
Got a whole lot more NBA we're going to touch upon in the postmortem on Monday, but we know what you want now. It's time for the Elite Eight. We'll tell you which teams really are elite and which are not when we come back.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, money time switches to Saturdays. College basketball board, NCAA tournament action, teams playing for the right to go to the Sweet 16. Let's start in Pittsburgh, where we're going to have Syracuse. Current line showing the Orange -5 over Kansas State. Total there, 134.5. Ohio State -7.5 against Gonzaga. That line's bounced up and down so far this morning. A total 136.5 between the Zags and the Buckeyes. Now, let's start with the Syracuse-K-State game. And it really is kind of a fascinating question with Syracuse right now. We saw, I mean, they were sluggish yesterday. They did not come anywhere close to bringing their A game. They lack passion. How else can you say it? You know, they only won the boards by 2 against a team they're supposed to be able to dominate the glass against. They allowed 17 assists, only forced 12 turnovers. Not the type of performance that we might have expected out of Syracuse were they fully healthy. And you wonder, in my mind, there's two key questions here. One, boy, the Orange were a good team this year. They're very capable of bouncing back and not a team that people are rushing to the window to go to bet right now. So if you like Syracuse, maybe you're getting a little bit of a bargain with this number. But the other thing, and it's just sticking in the back of my mind, I can't forget, it has to be more than a decade ago now, Cincinnati. Number one seed, Kenyon Martin, their star player, got hurt in the CUSA. They were in Conference USA at the time. The CUSA tournament heading into the big dance. And first round, barely escaped one of those 116 battles. Second round, they were gone. You just don't know if the loss of Fab Melo could lead Syracuse into that similar, hey, we're not even going to make it to the second weekend of the tournament approach. That is possibility here.
Or the flip side is sometimes when the A team is flat in a game and they win anyway, they catch that second win. They come back with some passion. We're just not sure if it happens with this bunch. Because notice, close as that game was against Asheville yesterday, Matt Dickey, leading scorer for Asheville, he goes 1-for-13. If he shoots just a little bit better, they're right there in that game. Fascinating matchups to watch, though. Even with Fab Melo, the Syracuse weakness this year, defensive rebounding. Often a problem for a team that plays zone. What does Kansas State do about as well as anyone? They hit the offensive boards. They are tenacious inside. So there is a matchup that Kansas State can win. The question is going to be execution against the zone. Can they get the ball inside for points that where they don't have to rely on offensive rebounds? Against Southern Miss, 19-for-30 on their two-point shots, only 2-for-12 on their triples. Rodney Magruder came up real, real big. If he can establish himself inside, yeah, they've got more than a puncher's chance here. Because, again, they're used to taking on tough competition. You play Missouri a couple of times. You play Kansas a couple of times. You play Baylor 3 times. You're accustomed to that high level. It's just, can Kansas State knock down enough outside shots? If they do, and they turn this game into a slog, this is one where we may not take the five. We might take a little bit of money line, believing that maybe the points won't matter. It could be an all or nothing, one way or the other. But there are elements of this game that do create a Kansas State upset.
There weren't teams that looked a whole lot better than Gonzaga yesterday. The Zags came out and just lit West Virginia up right from the get-go. That was another one of these games that was essentially over by halftime. And now the Zags have to step up in class a little bit. Big difference between a young West Virginia team that, frankly, did not fare well down the stretch versus this veteran Ohio State bunch, a team that's thinking national championship this year. And, of course, let's not forget the venue here. It's Pittsburgh. We saw a big Ohio State crowd in yesterday's contest, and I expect this crowd to be maybe an Ohio State, the moral equivalent of an Ohio State home game against Gonzaga on Saturday, which, you know, Zags are a tough team, no question, but this is going to be an extremely hostile venue for the lower-seeded team.
Yeah, the Gonzaga score a little bit misleading because it's similar to like a football game where you run the opening kickoff back for a touchdown. It was over so quickly because of the shooting. We don't know if we want to give them as much credit as that final score would indicate. But then you talked about Syracuse being flat. Ohio State, even though the scoreboard doesn't show it, they didn't play all that well yesterday. Got a huge game from Deshaun Thomas. 31 points and 12 rebounds. The rest of the team, they shot 13 for 36. Might that have been their little flat, lethargic game? You know, after going all the way to the finals of the Big Ten tournament, and remember, that Big Ten tournament extends to late Sunday afternoon. So they had a quick turnaround from Sunday afternoon against Michigan State to last night. That might be that little catch your breath, maybe cough and wheeze a little bit, possibly a little better focus. Reason why we focused on Thomas so much, though, Jared Sullinger all year has had trouble against guys his own size. We brought that out on the show many times. Gonzaga has the size, Robert Sacre and others, to hold Sullinger down a little bit. If you're going to bet Ohio State, you need someone else to be able to step up and score. Maybe Thomas brings that added element. With all the other weapons they have, he's a tough guy to have to defend.
Let's go to Louisville with the next set of two games. Marquette minus five against Murray State. Total there, 142.5. Kentucky's taking money. They're up to 11.5 over Iowa State. Total there, 140.
We saw Murray State yesterday come out very, very tight and nervous. One of those good, bad scenarios. You know, we liked Murray because they were going to be having a lot of fans there, semi-home game. But, boy, they were tight. They were nervous. They settled down on defense, and there was tremendous defensive energy against Colorado State. Held them to 17 points in the second half. How about getting 21 turnovers and only committing 7 assists? That defensive energy was terrific. But you know what? The Murray State offense never did settle down yesterday. 39.2% shooting. 5 of 17 free throws. They only made 13 to 26 free throws. Maybe those nerves never quite went away. Now, they've got a win under their belts now. But again, there's going to be a good crowd for them on Saturday. That means pressure. Now, here's a team that's facing something they're not accustomed to facing. Yeah, we like their energy. We didn't like their poise. And if you don't have your poise, Marquette, they can be a handful.
Oh, they sure can. I mean, Marquette stars played like stars yesterday. Another game, you know, BYU made a run in the second half, but Marquette off to the big early lead. They were able to withstand the run and then pull away big late and ended up winning that game by 20 against the Cougs. And, you know, Jay Crowder.
He was good.
He might have been the best player.
Boy, was he good.
I think he was the best player in the dance yesterday. Certainly as good as anyone that I saw on yesterday. 25 points, 16 boards, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Yeah. That's a pretty good stat-stuffing box score. We saw Darius Johnson-Odom, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Devontae Gardner, a guy whose absence we talked about a lot throughout the back half of that Big East campaign. Well, he's back in playing shape now, 15 points, 6 rebounds in 22 minutes of work. But when we're talking about this point spread range, and again, so many of these games are going to come down to free throw shooting, just like the Cincinnati-Texas game is coming down to right now. If you're watching that on another screen, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We talk about Marquette, good free throw shooting team, better than 72% from the charity stripe. So they have the capacity, if they're in the situation where they're getting fouled at the end, They have the capacity to sink those free throws and potentially win this game by margin.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the big issue in that game is, can Murray play from behind? Because we did a postmortem on Marquette about a month ago talking about the toughness of this team. And they are about as physically and mentally tough as anyone left in the field. That's hard to go head-to-head with for 40 minutes. Murray's not accustomed to that type of physical opponent. We might see just one or two little lapses in concentration by Murray that's enough to put Marquette over the hump and also get Marquette into position where they are shooting those free throws in the end game.
So for a coach who's had as much success as John Calipari has had throughout the course of his collegiate career, not so much in the NBA perhaps, but in college, he's been a quote-unquote great coach for the last 20 years. Guy takes a lot of criticism, really a lot. And you know what? Some of that probably warranted. When we look at what happened in the closing out Kentucky's win over Western Kentucky yesterday, some real head-scratchers from this end. You know, this is a Kentucky team. They were blowing them out, 78-47 at the 6 minute and 30-second mark. So what do? If you're the head coach in that situation, you have a relatively short rotation. Maybe empty the bench up 29, right? Or up 31, I should say. 6 minutes left, not so much. Coach Cal leaves all of his starters in the game, and what do the starters do? They allow Western Kentucky to go on a 19-3 run to close that game out. So you have the starters playing sloppy. You have the starters playing too many minutes, 165 of the 200 total minutes in that game, in a situation where they're supposed to be getting a little bit more rest. You know, and you have to wonder, does the sloppiness of that finish for the Kentucky Wildcats, does that carry forward? Does that lead to more sloppiness and more bad play to open up this game? It's not the time of year where you want to be giving your star players an opportunity to play bad basketball. That's exactly what Calipari did down the stretch yesterday, much to the chagrin of anyone who had a Wildcat ticket in their pocket.
One of the phrases we use a lot is stay in structure. And those are the coaches that we like. No circus time, no playground time. No matter what the score is, you're going to stay inside of your structure. Kentucky didn't do that much at all this season. If you look at the second half of Kentucky games, not how the scores were much, much higher. He let the kids get out and play. And I understand, Calipari was doing that from a recruiting standpoint. If you come here, you're going to get to go out and run and dunk sometimes in the open court in these games. They didn't stay in structure at all last night. Didn't work the clock well, didn't have the intensity where it should have been. Those are bad habits to have at this time of the year, especially against a team that's going to scrap the way that Iowa State will. Iowa State punched Connecticut yesterday. Usually it's the other way around. So we talked about the Big East type of toughness with teams like South Florida. Now, Connecticut was a team that took the punch. Iowa State out-rebounded them badly. They moved the ball well on offense. Our key tomorrow as we break this one down, because it's getting up to that tempting point where it's a take, maybe at plus 12 or better. White has just been terrific all season for Iowa State because he's been able to maneuver his way around a big guy who can get away from the basket, draw opposing big men away. But now he's going to have to find a way to score against the toughest defensive front court in the nation. If his game is taken away, can Iowa State find the other pieces to stay in the hunt? It's very, very tempting as this line moves towards 12 to look to the Cyclones here.
Yeah, it's so funny when you read the national media reports about what happened yesterday. It's all, oh, UConn tanked, UConn tanked. No, they didn't. Iowa State went in there and punched them right in the mouth. Don't know if they can do the Kentucky. But as this line creeps up, both you and I getting a little bit more interested in that Cyclone side. Up next, we're going to try not to make a wrong turn in Albuquerque and then on to Portland as Money Time continues.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
We've got one final score to report already. Cincinnati with the 6-point win over Texas. Cincy and the under cash in today's wake up and bet ball game. Call it what you will. We also have one game at halftime right now. Creighton trails Alabama by 7, down 30-23 at the break. Halftime line anywhere, 2.5 or 3. Creighton, the short favorite. Total there, 72.5, let's call it.
It'd be an interesting total, because you would figure Creighton would be a chaser.
Sure.
You know, when we talk about these teams, the teams that are going to play a game all the way out, Creighton would be a good example. If they're down 10 with 2 minutes, they're going to probably foul a lot.
I would say they'll foul repeatedly. And Creighton's also the kind of team that can hit the three-point shots in the last minute or two of action to extend that game and continue fouling.
Well, you go intro some games, I might go see the janitor.
Yeah, go run. Oh, missing halftime betting opportunities live on air. But that's the price we're willing to pay to make sure that you out there in viewer land remain informed. All right, let's go to Albuquerque, where we've got Wisconsin and Vanderbilt. A pick 'em right now, total 120. And Baylor, the early 7.5-point chalk against Colorado, total there, 133.
See the impact of the betting markets in a game like Vanderbilt, Wisconsin. The markets are going to be ahead of just about everyone else in this industry because it's what they have to do. We talk about Ken Pomeroy's ratings, Jeff Sagarin's ratings, and the fact that this time of the year, games tend to not get too far off of them. Here's one that is. You go look those ratings up, they're going to both call for about a 4 or 4.5 to Wisconsin. Here's what the markets know. The full season data on Vanderbilt, not all that significant now that they've kicked it into the gear that they're in. Yeah, early season home loss to Indiana State, early season home loss to Cleveland State, those games really don't carry any meaning at this point. Festus Ezeli, healthy, in the rotation now. And boy, a team that needed to get over the hump at tournament time from a confidence standpoint, the combination of beating Kentucky to win the SEC last Sunday, and then getting that first round win over Harvard, yeah, the monkey's off the back now for a team that was rated in the top 10 at the start of the season, may actually be a top 10 team right now, but they're just not being priced like one.
And you look at the Commodore scorers, you know, you look at John Jenkins and Jeff Taylor and Festus Ezeli, which might be my favorite name in all of college basketball this year, Brad Tinsley, they're all high percentage shooters. This is a team that gets good shots, even against good defenses. That's how they were able to hang tough with Kentucky and even knock them off in that SEC championship game. That's what Vandy brings to the table. With the inside presence, they're able to create some problems for teams that can't match up with them in the paint, forcing double teams and then kicking out to the wide-open shooters. That's the Commodores' game. And that may well work well for them against a team like Wisconsin, a team that doesn't bang in the paint the way that some of Bo Ryan's best teams have. You know, John Lauer, of course, was their low post banger last year. He's in the NBA right now. And this is a Wisconsin team. I mean, when they shoot, they're tough to beat, as we saw yesterday. Unfortunately, a play of the day loser when we talk about Montana. But what happened in that ballgame? Badger shot lights out. I mean, lights out start to finish. 10 of 19 from three-point range in that ballgame. They were also able to dominate the boards 32-19. Don't know if they're going to have either of those advantages in this particular game, but one thing we do have to consider here, Big Ten, a lot better of a conference than the SEC was in 2012. Does that perhaps make the Badgers an undervalued item in this particular matchup, Dave?
Got a chance to watch Baylor yesterday. You saw Baylor being Baylor. These spectacular moments inside of games where they look like a Final Four team, and then just absolute fingernails on chalkboard basketball. Now, when we had set that game up earlier in the week, we talked about the fact that they were starting to use a three-guard lineup more, play more man-to-man defense, which is what fits that team best. So what do they do against one of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation? They come out in the zone, let South Dakota State have all sorts of wide-open shots early, and they're down 12. Then they make the adjustment. They go back to doing what they should do best, control the middle portion of the game, and just when you think, here's your buy signal to Baylor, well, here they come again. Last 4 minutes, have the 4 minute mark, have the ball up 10, complete control. Don't make another basket the rest of the game. Couple of turnovers, go almost 3 minutes and 40 seconds without scoring at all. The more we see of Drew on the sidelines, we're realizing he's recruited well here. He's just not maximizing this talent. So it's a team that will look awfully good in stretches, but they'll pull your hair out also if that's where your money is.
Well, that's just it. I mean, if you watch part of a Baylor game, you're like, oh, wow, this team's really good. Maybe it's a uniform. You know, maybe it's those fluorescent yellow. Are those fluorescent yellow or fluorescent green? I was having an argument with someone. I thought it was green, but apparently they're fluorescent yellow uniforms for Baylor. But they just they look so good. You're like, wow, this team, they can win it. They can go to the Final Four. They are, and the talent level's there. But as Dave mentioned, the late game execution has been a problem for Baylor all year long. Basketball smarts, not what the Bears do best. Colorado, you know, this is a team that has some basketball smarts. Weren't on full display down the stretch last night against UNLV, but the fact that they were up 20 in that ballgame allowed them to blow 18 points of that lead in about 3.5 minutes in the second half and still survive and advance to the next round. And boy, this Buffs team, you know, 5-0 straight up, 4-0 against the spread, four outright underdog wins since the start of the Pac-10 tournament last weekend. Now, they did look gassed last night, and that has to be a concern here against a team that's bigger than they are, a team that's more physical than they are, and something that we didn't see in the Pac-12 a lot this season, a team that can really score from the low post. Pac-12 didn't have a lot of good centers, a lot of good forwards who can hit those interior shots and dominate the glass, but Baylor does. So it's certainly a tough matchup for Colorado, a team that may be gassed, but a team, when it comes to execution and X's and O's, they're at a better level than Baylor, and that may allow them to stay live here.
Okay, one of those little cautions that we talked about at the start of the show, Colorado's a classic example of the type of team that will foul all the way out at the end of this game. When you come this close, when you're Colorado, you might foul down 10, you might foul down 12. The one thing Baylor does do at the end of games, when they get to the free throw line, they make free throws, over 75% for the full season.
Let's go to Portland. We have Louisville, -1 and 128 against New Mexico. And that's another game where the early money came on the Rick Pitino squad and late money has come on Steve Alford's squad. So we've seen kind of some wild line fluctuations in that contest. Indiana, they've been bet up to 6 now over VCU. Total there, 138.5.
Going to be fascinating to break down Louisville, New Mexico, both from a straight-up and from a totals conundrum. How about this? And this is a rarity. The number 3 defensive team in the nation against the number 5 in terms of field goal percentage. That's pretty good to get them head-to-head. But now here's the problem. You tend to think, okay, great defenses. They're going to struggle to score. Maybe, just maybe, we look under. But no, because these defenses are so good, both teams are going to want to push the pace. And they've got point guards that can do it. You've got two of the quicker point guards in the NCAA. So we may actually see a faster pace than this level of total is called for. They're going to get up and on the court. They're going to take a lot of shots. But can they make any of them? Louisville's defense has just been phenomenal over the past month. From let's say right now we might have them no worse than the number 3 defensive team in the country when we put all factors together. But yeah, they go in the Big East tournament. Did the offense come around? No. They beat Davidson yesterday. Did the offense come around? No, that was another ugly offensive performance for them. Are the Cardinals ever going to make a shot, or at this stage do we say they just can't shoot?
Well, I mean, you look at the season-long numbers, and again, we don't like to concentrate too much on season-long numbers right now. When we look at them, there's a really sharp disparity between these two teams. There were some good defensive teams in the Mountain West this year. Maybe not some great ones, but certainly some good ones. Yet against that level of competition, New Mexico, number 10 in the country in assists per game, number 29 in the country in assist-to-turnover ratio. They were moving the ball. They were getting good shots consistently throughout the course of the season. Well, you look at Louisville's numbers for those particular stats. Well, they're number 92 in assists per game, number 185 in assist-to-turnover ratio, and number 258 in turnovers per game. So, you know, we saw them win with defense, and defense was enough to get them to a Big East title. Defense was enough to get them out of the first round. But they only shot 40% from the floor in yesterday's ballgame. Just one made three-pointer in that contest. Just 8 assists in the game. But the fact they were able to win, you know, Peyton Siva got hurt, or sorry, fouled out, I should say, in that, not hurt, he's healthy, he'll be playing. Fouled out in just 25 minutes of action. Yuri Deng, 4 fouls in just 19 minutes of action. So they were able to survive in advance despite missing, you know, their point guard and their dominating low post defensive force, which is probably a plus when we talk about the psyche of Louisville. They get some confidence for the rest of the team and get two of their key players some additional rest, which they might not have had they not had those foul issues. So doing some positive things for Louisville. The question is, New Mexico, are they going to be able to score against this level of defense?
Speaking of defense, here comes Shaka Smart and Virginia Commonwealth yet again. And gosh, have they been fun to watch in the tournament the last few years. Now 6-1 straight up and against the spread, beating the spread by over 100 points in those seven games. But you know what? It really wasn't defense that beat Wichita State, or at least not the usual way of playing defense. Wichita only turned the ball over 12 times. You'd expect Wichita to maybe win with that turnover count. Yesterday, Virginia Commonwealth made just enough shots, especially in the end game, to be able to escape. But here's what we find interesting. Inside of this 6-1 pattern in the tournament, they're a difficult team to prepare for because of that defensive scheme. In the three NCAA games the last 2 years where the opponents only had one day to prepare for them, they beat the spread by 72 points in those games. That's 24 points per outing. And note that these were actually against veteran seasoned teams whose coaches have been around for a long time. This was John Thompson at Georgetown. This was Matt Painter at Purdue. This was Bill Self in Kansas. So now here comes the big question as we break this one down. Can Tom Crean and his Hoosiers put a game plan together in just 24 hours?
Sure. And Indiana's going to have a hard time matching what they were able to do yesterday on the offensive end of the court. They shoot 59% from the floor in the game against New Mexico, allowed 55% shooting in that contest. Hit more than half of their three-point attempts in that game, 80% from the free throw line. It was a particularly strong offensive showing for an Indiana team that's capable of going off on the offensive end of the court. No question about it. They have very skilled offensive player. And again, with the Zeller in the middle, commands double teams and allows open shooters on the kickouts. He's a pretty good passer for a big man. But, you know, they didn't face that many defenses like what we see from VCU throughout the course of the season. You didn't see a lot of that in the Big Ten. Didn't see a lot of that in non-conference play. And when you look at that VCU track record, I can't bet against them. There's no way I'm going to step in front of Shaka Smart and the Rams. Maybe this is where they die, but not with my money. If anything here, I might look to see this game go over the total. I would look to see Indiana try to push the pace at every opportunity. I would look for VCU to take advantage of some of the Hoosiers' defensive weakness defending the three-point line. And again, when you have that type of pressure, you're going to see a fast pace. It's just a matter of getting the buckets to drop to get this game up and over the total. But it's not where we're going to go, Dave, when we talk about play of the day, is it?
No, for the best of this board, let's go back to Vanderbilt, Wisconsin. As we talked about in setting that game up, Vanderbilt was a top 10 team preseason. We believe the preseason prognostications were right. Didn't have Festus Ezeli early, didn't quite click into their rhythm. But go back and look at all three of the Vanderbilt-Kentucky games. Point blank to win the ball, finally did win the third time around. It's a tough matchup for Wisconsin. Bo Ryan doesn't have great athleticism. You're going to have a tough time extending out to the Vanderbilt shooters, who force you to go a step or two beyond where you would usually play defense. Yeah, here's a pick 'em game that, no, really should be Vanderbilt, about 3, 3.5. They are that much better than Wisconsin. In this range, excellent value to back the Commodores.
Commodores at Pick'em, that's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for the Friday edition. Thanks so much for watching. Dave, we're getting out of here. Let's go watch some games. You guys do too. We'll see you back here on Monday.